Good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. And my name is Norman Stockwell. I'm your host today for the program and very pleased to have with me in the studio Robert McChesney, well known, I think, to listeners here in Madison for his tremendous work in media reform, the co-founder of Free Press, the National Media Reform Group, also one-time host of this very program.
Hey, I got my start in this very room.
That's right. That's right. The table was rounder in those days.
That's right.
Bob, your brand new book, which we'll be talking about throughout the hour, and it's called, most appropriately, Will the Last Reporter Please Turn Out the Lights? The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It. But talk about this book, if you could, for a minute. Tell us where it came from, what's in it.
Well, the book was something that grew out of the work I've been doing with John Nichols. John and I wrote a book that came out last year, The Death and Life of American Journalism, which outlined what we saw was the collapse of journalism and how to solve it through large public subsidies, including to stations like WRT. And what we noticed was this crisis was evolving rapidly. I mean, job loss was huge. Newsrooms were closing. And there was really a lot of stuff being written that was really interesting. We wanted to collect it together and commission some new pieces. So there would be a book out by 2011, that would be cutting edge. So we wouldn't be reading books written 3 years ago, 5 years ago, which are about as relevant to what's going on today as discussions of the War of the Roses would be to contemporary military strategy. I mean, we're in such a deep and profound crisis. And we took about 10 book pieces that have been published in the last 2 years, but the other 20 pieces in the book, and they're all around 10 to 15 pages long, were commissioned from people who we thought had something, they were doing research or they had something to say, people like Janine Jackson and Chris Hedges, who I think listeners of WRT are certainly familiar with, FCC Commissioner Michael Copps. We get Matt Welsh from Reason Magazine. It's not a uniform viewpoint that we provide. It's a range of informed views. But there's a real minimum of name-calling, of jargon, and a real maximum of, okay, we got a crisis. Now, how are we going to solve this thing? It's a lovely book, if I may say so.
And it's actually not even out yet. Its official release date is April 1st. We're going to get some advance copies of it, I think, the last week of March.
Hot off the press, are coming direct to WRT. Before anyone else gets them, they're coming to Wart listeners. Well, I think it's a good deal. And I might add that I've got a lot of new material in here. And so does John Nichols. Separate stuff we've done. John Nichols has a new book coming out on socialism. And he wrote a wonderful essay on how socialists basically defined and protected the First Amendment during the First World War and the period right after. And I've got a long chapter on that same period. There's a lot of rich history here about how our press system and freedom of the press evolved in America that's almost entirely unknown in conventional discourse. And once you read a book like this, I'd like to think it really changes the way you're going to think about this crisis. Rather than being something like, and here are the parallels to what's going on at the Capitol right now. You know, the conventional wisdom is, well, if people can't make money doing journalism, oh, well, we don't have journalism. We just shut up and shop, mind your business, and that's the way of the world. There's nothing you can do about it. And I think once you read this book, that notion is forever blown to smithereens. You understand that having journalism is something an option if rich people decide they can make money doing it. Having journalism is something that's the foundation of a free society. The framers of our republic understood that creating a free press was the starting point before you even could think about a constitution, before you could even think about elections, and that it's not a negotiable thing, and that it's the first duty of a free people to make sure they have a credible free press. And getting this book, I think, will alert people to that. And the good news is you can kill two birds with one stone, Norm, because not only can you get this book, which I think people will love, but you can get it by supporting WRT. And right now, I think WRT, I've never been prouder of it. And I've been connected to the station for two decades. I've been listening for over two decades. I think it has found its moment in the sun in the last month in a way that should crystallize for anyone who listens to Public Affair just how extraordinary WRT is. And the one test, and just this morning, I was down at one of the local TV stations, a commercial station, for another bit of business. And I was looking at their TV monitors covering Wisconsin this morning. And the way they framed the story is so bogus. It's still like, well, there's the Tea Party versus these labor guys. And I'm saying, these are people who've never been here. They have no idea what they're talking about. They're completely missing the story. But there's one place we can go this has not missed the story at all. It's been in the middle of it, telling the truth about what's happening. It's WRT, and the eyes of the world are on this station in this city right now. This is the time Madison has to step up and say, WRT is part of the reason why demonstrations that are taking place are possible in this city. Without a WRT, which is the first station to break the story over the air about the coming strike, about budget, about Walker's budget plan, without a station like this, it might not have happened. And that's why Walker would love nothing more than to see the funding for public broadcasting and community stations in this country be eliminated. The exact same people are trying to get rid of collective bargaining. The exact same people are leading the fight right now in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House to zero out all funding to WRT, to all community stations, all public stations, NPR and PBS. It's not a budget issue about public broadcasting anymore, Norm, than it's a budget issue about what's going on with collective bargaining. And this is a key part of the fight. If we win collective bargaining, but we lose media, collective bargaining is not going to be around for very long.
You know, you're talking about the funding for public broadcasting, and there's actually five different bills that are sort of coursing around in the halls of Washington, D.C. right now, trying to defund public broadcasting. The most draconian of them wants to amend the Communications Act of 1934 to make it illegal to fund public broadcasting. The nicest, or the mildest of them, wants to zero out funding in 3 years for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So that gives you an idea of the spectrum of these five different bills. One of them passed the House a week ago Saturday and is on its way into the Senate maybe as early as this week.
That's right. Let's stop there, Stan. The Progressive magazine. The Progressive, like the Center for Media and Democracy and Ward, I think we've seen all the great sort of progressive institutions of our community have just risen, taken their game up several notches in the last month. The Progressive, Ruth Conniff, Matt Rothschild, they've been covering this around the clock and doing great work. And, you know, if you aren't a subscriber to the Progressive magazine, this is a chance to get it. It's a wonderful magazine.
And they have a great event coming up this Saturday as well with Jim Hightower at the Barrymore Theater.
Hey, you hear who the headliner is? It's no longer Hightower. He's the warm-up act, the headliner, Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich and Tammy Baldwin.
Tammy will be there.
And, of course, Matt Rothschild from The Progressive. Ruth Conniff will be there. And Ed Garvey will be there. It starts at 7 o'clock on Saturday the 12th at the Barrymore Theater, 2090 Atwood Avenue. Bob, let's talk some more about your brand new book, Will the Last Reporter Please Turn Out the Lights, The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It? Now, in your previous book, which we've talked about on the air here before, The Death and Life of American Journalism, you talk about the different kinds of support historically for a free press in this country and how those have kind of been whittled away over the years. And we've seen now, as we just talked about the attacks on the funding for public broadcasting, more attempts to whittle away at the support for a free press. Talk about that history and what we've lost here in this country.
In a nutshell, Norm, this is the way to understand journalism. There's never been in the United States history a moment in which final readers of newspapers or users of news media have been able to provide enough revenues to support a popular press that will serve the entire population. Final readers may have been able to provide enough resources to provide journalism to elites and to the upper class or even parts of the middle class, but never a mass popular journalism. And for the first 100 years of American history, unknown to most people until they read a handful of books, including ours and this current one, the way that crisis was dealt with, because the founders never thought in terms of just turning press system over to rich people and hope they get lucky that these guys would make money doing it and roll the dice. For the first 100 years of American history, we actually had huge printing and postal subsidies to bankroll a huge array of newspapers that never would have existed, including the entirety of the abolitionist press, never would have existed without postal subsidies. And those subsidies still exist. They declined sharply over the years by the end of the 19th century, and they were replaced by advertising. And advertising came to provide between 50 and 100% of the revenues for all commercial news media, for the last century. Well, advertising is jumping ship now for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the internet. It's no longer supporting journalism as it traditionally has. And there's no reason to expect that final end users are going to pick up the slack they never have. It doesn't work that way. Journalism's always been a public good, and the advertising hid that for a while. And that means if we're going to have it, it requires support above and beyond what final consumers are willing to pay. And to us, the solution's real clear then. What we have to do is what other democracies do. And one of the striking things that is really not well known in the United States is that for every dollar per capita capita, the United States spends supporting public or community media. Every other democracy in the world that's an advanced economy spends at least $10. Most of them spend $30 or $40. Some of them spend $75 to $100 for every dollar we spend per capita. The difference is night and day. And so here we are in a crisis in which corporate media basically given up on doing journalism. They're closing newsrooms. They've junked the whole thing. Corporate media are getting out of the game, and the political right wants to terminate public and community media. They want to cut the funding. They want WRT to lose 20% of its revenues. Imagine what that would do to us here. They want to do that when we're doing exactly the wrong direction. This is like being a global a climate change denier and basically blowing out the carbons. This is what we're doing to democracy. And, you know, I organize on this issue. Free press works on this issue. But the great thing about this issue is that while you organize politically to get the sort of change you need for the medium and long term, in the near term, it's something we do control. We have great victories we've won, like having community stations like WRT. The catch is, though, we don't want WRT to rely on advertising. Nothing would make Scott Hot Walker happier than us having to sell ads at WRT, because that would pretty much implicitly put a range on our content he wouldn't have to worry about. But that means that the listeners of this community, the people of this community, it's their station, has to provide the support, both as volunteers, as most of us are, or they have to give money whenever they can. And I know that, you know, look, these are hard times. And I talk to people all the time who love Wart. Wart has a huge listenership. I've got a statewide NPR show in Illinois, and it's number one rated in my area, but it gets fewer calls than I get when I'm on WRT. This station is extremely popular.
Bob, what about the criticism that we hear often about funding for public radio, that, you know, well, if you let the government fund it, then the government will control it. You know, people are beholden to the government. What about that argument?
Well, on the surface, it seems like a pretty good argument. And certainly we should all be concerned about letting government have any control over the content. The problem with that is that it doesn't stack up empirically. The evidence doesn't support it. Both historically in the United States, we had these massive government subsidies, printing and postal subsidies, and we had a broader range of viewpoints, no censorship for the first 75 years of American history. These subsidies supported both abolitionist newspapers and pro-slavery newspapers. They managed to cover the full range. So you can absolutely have subsidies without having the hand of government play any role whatsoever. In fact, what we see now in Europe is all the researchers in on European countries that have these huge public media and journalism subsidies, they are all ranked as having much better press systems by groups like The Economist magazine, by groups like Freedom House, than the United States has. That they have less government censorship, less government harassment of the free press in countries with huge subsidies. And in fact, new research shows that countries with the largest journalism and public affairs subsidies have the most feisty and dissident press towards the government in power. It produces the exact opposite effect than what people might anticipate. So it's a legitimate issue. We're concerned about it. But it's definitely, history shows and every other country shows, it's a very solvable problem. Now, the catch here, though, and this is where I think you were getting at, Norm, knowing you as I do, the same people who talk about this concern about government are the same people who, in their corporate news media coverage, invariably parrot government positions on foreign policy. So they say this with no sense of irony, that the most like government toady journalism in this country on foreign policy is the corporate news media. And somehow, if we have WRT gets funding, you're going to start carrying water for, you know, Barack Obama or John McCain. It's nonsensical.
I want to talk about Wart's coverage a little bit more.
Sure.
Because, you know, Wart is a little tiny community radio station. We're here in Madison. We cover a 50-mile radius of South Central Wisconsin, which we can only do, by the way, through your generous donations to keep our antenna up on that tower. But we're having a much greater impact. While we were sitting here, actually, that phone that just rang was Press TV in Iran calling to look for an update on the situation in Madison. We've had people doing interviews for Al Jazeera. We've had interviews on Cambridge, Massachusetts radio stations. We've had interviews on KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, Radio Victoria in El Salvador, ARPAS, the community radio network in El Salvador as well. We've hosted here in the station Laura Flanders and her program Grit TV,
sure.
The Uptake out of the Twin Cities in Minneapolis-St. Paul. We've been working with so many different people this past 3 weeks to get out the story. And of course, Amy Goodman, who came here with the whole Democracy Now! Crew, spent about a day and a half with us here in Madison, came on Wart, did the show live from inside the Capitol, did a wonderful event at the Orpheum Theater. But, you know, people are coming to us.
That's right.
Because they know that Wart has its finger on the pulse of what's going on in the city, particularly in the Capitol and with these protests over the last 3 weeks.
Well, Wart is especially good at listening to people who aren't in power. That's what Wart does and traditional journalism doesn't do. And so when people who aren't in power sort of suddenly decide to make a little history on their own and not just do what they're told, people at conventional journalism are sort of completely flummoxed. They, what do we make of this? Who's your leader? Where's your press release? You know, what's your slogan? What's your jingle I'm supposed to repeat? You know, they actually go out and talk to people and listen and get a sense of the history being made. It's just something orthogonal to them. That's not part of what they've done. And that's what Wart can do. And I'll tell you a funny story, Norm. I was driving back last Sunday from Illinois 8 days ago. And I'd been in Illinois the whole weekend, and I was coming home Sunday night, and I had my dial at 89.9, my radio, and I knew, like, right as I got near close to the state line, I'd finally be able to pick up Wart, and I finally get it, and it's just around 5 o'clock, and Third World View's coming out, and you're co-hosting it. You're one of the people there. And it was so exciting because you were racing over from the Capitol to give the latest update on what's going on, and you were breathless. I mean, this was like classic radio. This is real journalism. I mean, really a breaking story, not being fed by some PR guy for, you know, the Koch brothers telling you what to say or Americans for Prosperity. And it was just so exciting to have a breaking story coming over WRT on the most important political story in the country, if not the world. I won't displace Libya, but I'll say we're right up there.
In fact, we've been getting, you know, solidarity messages from other parts of the world. You know, the famous photo that's was on CNN of the worker in Egypt holding up the sign that said, "We support the workers. We stand with the workers in Wisconsin." But also, you know, pizza orders coming in to the local pizza place here to bring food to the Capitol, coming from like about 19 different countries now, as well as all 50 states. The workers in Korea supporting the workers in Madison. The workers in the Suez Canal Workers Union supporting the workers here in Madison. Madison is in the headlines, and WORT is creating many of those headlines right here. Michael Moore was in town this past weekend, did a great talk on the steps of the Capitol.
Great doesn't do it justice. Gave a mind-blowing talk.
Right. I want to also mention, by the way, great quote from Pete Seeger in the somebody from AP, Scott Bauer from the AP, called Pete Seeger to ask him what he thought about the Wisconsin protest.
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
And he said it's really inspiring because it shows that we're all Americans. And he went on to explain what he meant by that. He said, being an American doesn't mean saying the Pledge of Allegiance or singing a certain song at the right time. It means using the rights that are in the Constitution the way they were designed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Pete Seeger's words about the Wisconsin protests. We have a couple of calls on the line, and actually one of them is a caller who wants to call in and ask a question. And I want to let them on in just a second, but I have to say, the thing that I like about this program of public affair that we're doing right now, and I say this every once in a while, but I'll say it again. This show, I call it a platform and a window. It's a platform that we provide to the newsmakers, people like Bob McChesney sitting across the table from me, to give them the best possible showcase to express their ideas, their issues, their concerns, their analysis. But it's also a window. It's a window for you, the listeners out there, to be able to talk directly to the newsmakers in an unmediated way. And that's what we do on this program. It's what we've been doing on this program since we started it in the late 1970s. Public Affair has been on since about 1978 here on WRT, and it's always been about providing you, the listeners, with direct access to the newsmakers. Let's take this call right now. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Bob, I don't know whether you have any feelings on this, but something's always intrigued me. They fair studies on the mainstream reporters, and they found that they're more socially liberal than the majority of the readers, but they're also more economically conservative than the majority of the readers. And I just wondered, and you've known a lot of these people personally over the years, is it the hiring process, this person's particular mix of values, or is it that they become more economically conservative because of the pressures of being in a corporate media and internalized these behaviors and behaviors? I've always found this perplexing, because I can't understand how you can be socially liberal and economically conservative, because the two are not separate categories.
Okay, thank you for that call. The phone line a little bit choppy, but I think we got the question. Bob?
The caller made a great question. Journalist, the research, David Kratto, a sociologist, has done the most research on this, and FAIR has published it, Fairness in Action Reporting, shows that most journalists are socially liberal on issues like gay rights and women's rights, right to choose. They tend to be fairly liberal. And the farther you go up the pecking order of journalism to the top of the lead newsrooms and the top jobs, the higher up the command post you go, the social liberalism remains. But what you lose is economic liberalism. And the more you get to the top editors at the Post or the Times, and certainly the publishers, their economics and their foreign policy tend to be much more conventional, pro-corporate, anti-labor, pro-U.S. militarism. And so there has been this anomaly or this issue. And, you know, it's funny because they make it sound like, the right wing makes it sound like, oh, see these crazy social liberal reporters. But on every issue that reporters are socially liberal, we now know they're actually with the majority of the people in this country. The vast majority of the people in this country are socially liberal on every one of those issues. This is not a right-wing country on social issues. And now I think what's striking is that it's becoming increasingly clear that there is a huge gulf between economic conservatism and the bulk of the people of this country, that is the gap. And that's one of the problems we face with our journalism. The corporate structure is the biggest hurdle. The capitalist support is the biggest hurdle. But our journalists have been completely incapable of grasping the labor movement. It's something that they just don't understand why people would care about collective bargaining, although ironically, many of them are in unions.
256-2001, 866-899-9678. You know, one of the things that's happened as we've seen the decline of newsrooms around the country is that we've seen the decline of bodies in those newsrooms, you know, fewer and fewer people. And, you know, I've always argued this, that it's a basic sort of tenet of capitalism, that you try to make your operations, you know, cheaper to run, right?
Sure.
And so as we have more and more media consolidation, you have fewer and fewer people in those newspapers, in those radio stations, in those TV stations.
The rational business
man. And it's a simple fact that the fewer people you have, the less diversity you have. Even if everybody in the newsroom was a Republican, you still have that many fewer different points of view when you decrease the number of bodies. So it's almost like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's absolutely true. In fact, what we've discovered in the research we did, that the number of journalists per capita in the United States has been declining from the late 1980s. And to give some sense of how bad the situation has gotten, Norm, in 1960, there was one PR person for every working journalist. In 1980, there's 1.2 PR people trying to doctor the news surreptitiously for every working journalist. Today, there's 4 PR people for every working journalist. It's a complete mismatch, and that's why the lion's share of what passes for news and journalism today is public relations. It's spin. It is, in an honest world, propaganda.
We do have another caller that wants to get in with a question, and hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Norm. This is Mike McEntee from The Uptake.
Oh, great, great. The Uptake, we were just mentioning that we have been hosting you folks here in the Wart Studios as part of the coverage of stuff going on in the Capitol, and you've been doing just a tremendous, tremendous job of getting out video images of what's happening here in Madison, with all kinds of folks covering the demonstrations, the rallies, the talks inside the Capitol as well. Thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah, no, and also thanks to you. I mean, right now we would not be able to do that kind of coverage if we didn't have somebody like Norm, like you, and WORT to help us out. This goes right to the core of what you guys are talking about. Covering news these days, it hasn't gotten that much cheaper to go out and do stuff. I mean, there has been some reduction in expense, but most of the thing that's been reduced is the number of people going out and covering it. And that's why citizen journalism organizations like us have sprung up, and we have to rely on the help of wonderful people like you and others to kind of make it work. And actually, it's actually, I think, better coverage because of that, because you end up a little bit closer to the people who are out there, as opposed to just for so many years I worked network TV, where, well, you know, we'd essentially helicopter in somebody to cover something, and they would tell the story that, well, that New York told them that they were going to tell, and when they got done, they fly out, and they didn't know what was going on. We've been working with you folks on the ground, and I think we've gotten a much better understanding of what's happening because of that. But in general, what you've been talking about, the problem that we're having here with the media just declining, the amount of dollars being spent on it, the number of PR people, as you were saying, to news people, is just amazing. And in Madison, the story right now is almost invisible on the national radar because the networks are too busy covering whatever Charlie Sheen has said or whatever Lindsay Lohan has been arrested for lately.
Right. I heard Charlie Sheen is on all of the networks plus most of the cable channels right now as we speak.
And, you know, I don't even know what that story's about because I haven't been paying attention. I just go, okay, it can't be as important as, you know, 100,000 people showing up in Madison to protest what is, you know, a fundamental right of that most people think that they should have in the United States, you know, workers' rights. And it is beyond me why, well, I know why, but it's just, I'm just flabbergasted that the media can let something like that go, especially when people are seeking out the information on it. One of our folks, Jason Barnett, sent me some links that on the Internet, people are seeking information out about this subject 2-1 over even what's happening in Libya, and that's worldwide. And so why isn't CNN, CBS, NBC down there live every day? What's going on?
I can tell you why, Mike. You probably know yourself, which is that in Washington and New York at the headquarters, the people they usually rely on to set what the legitimate news stories are the top politicians and the parties. They aren't talking about Wisconsin. So they're not getting pushed by anyone in power to talk this issue. It's only journalists who come here and experience what you're doing. And what WRT does, actually go out there and talk to people and see what's actually happening. And don't just wait to hear Governor Walker or some Democratic person tell you what to think about it. That you see the real story, and it gets covered by real journalists. And our corporate news media guys back in those buildings, they just are clueless, really, how to cover a story like this, because they haven't had a story like this in a long time.
They haven't. You know, and also, there's also something as news fatigue. You know, the producer of the program kind of gets tired of putting the same story at the top of the show every day, and so it either starts dropping or it says, well, let's find something different, and it's always the flavor of the moment.
Let's hope the Charlie Sheen show story hits the news fatigue button soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, thanks so much for calling in, and we definitely have appreciated having you folks from the Uptake here, and we'll continue to work together on this and other projects in the future as well.
I appreciate your support, and I appreciate what your listeners do to support you.
Well, you know, I just want to say, Norm, we've got a few minutes left, that how long have you been hosting APA?
Let's figure that out for a second.
Okay, I'll let you work on that.
Well, no, I'll tell you, I've been at the station since 1983. Yeah. I hosted a folk music show for a long time. Mm-hmm. I started doing news programming on the first day when Martin Luther King Boulevard was named in Madison, which was January of 1985 on Martin Luther King Day. And I started hosting a public affair in like 88 or 89 as a guest host when Jeff Hansen was still
sure,
here.
I remember that.
I've been hosting this regular Monday slot since about 1994.
Mm-hmm. Every week, or have you alternated?
It varies. Yeah. I mean, for a while I gave some of my Mondays to you, as you remember.
I do indeed, and I thank you for that. It was wonderful.
I always like to tell people that that everything that Bob McChesney knows about radio, he learned from me.
And that there's a lot.
You're actually
being modest. It's not just radio, but in fact, you know, Norm, you are such a modest person, and it's such an honor to know you. And I think people, Norm is the most modest person I know. You do so much for this station and for this community. I know you don't want me to say this, but the listener should know this, that this is someone, one of the reasons WRT works as well as it does, it has a staff of selfless people who don't have egos, who just really believe in community radio.
It's a staff collective. There's seven people on the full-time staff, and we're also members of SEIU, Local 150, just so that people are aware that we also have, you know, have an interest in the union issues that are going on right now in Madison and around the country, because we too collectively bargain for our salaries and benefits here at WRT.
You know, Norm, I travel around the country and I've been to most community stations in one form or another. I've seen a lot of public stations. My show in Illinois is on a public station. And I say this everywhere, not just in Madison. WRT is the crown jewel of community broadcasting in this country. And it is such, it makes living in Madison a much more enjoyable, satisfying experience than would be otherwise. And do not take it for granted.
Ben. And thank you, Bob, for coming in today. And again, that brand new book, Will the Last Journalist Please Turn Out the Lights? Well, we don't want the last journalist here, and we don't want the lights to go out.
Dark vision, fly-by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. Woo!